Mark and I are good friends. Mark's a Microsoft MVP and an RD. He also runs a company called Intellitecture, which is a consulting company. Mark, do you want to talk more? And
yeah, we just do high-end Microsoft development, a lot of SharePoint, a lot of Visual Studio, a lot of ALM with Team Foundation Server, that kind of stuff. So
awesome.
A lot of best practices.
And Mark also is the author of Essential C-Sharp, the book. If you guys have any questions about C-Sharp, Mark knows a little bit about it, I guess. So, yeah, let's get started and have fun with this. And knowing Mark, I think we'll be talking a lot of code in this session. Right, Mark?
Sure, absolutely, for sure.
Thanks.
Let's go ahead. So I want to start by looking at... just starting with a new sort of SharePoint project, what you're thinking about. I think the key thing, there's one sort of message I want to get about why SharePoint. We have crossed the line. In 2007, as we looked at SharePoint development, it was kind of a painful thing. And I don't say that lightly. I say that as somebody who's experienced lots of pain in SharePoint 2007. And there was really this sort of question that people often came to me as a consultant and said, hey, do I get started with SharePoint development or do I just go with raw ASP.NET? And if I was truly off... you know, honest, and Microsoft wasn't listening, and Methuen wasn't sponsoring me or something like that, I'd go, you know, really? It might be easier to start with ASP.NET. That the overhead of starting with SharePoint and the idiosyncrasies you're going to experience are somewhat overwhelming. And I think that when we get to SharePoint 2010, we've crossed the line. That has changed. And the message you sort of want to look at when you start making these architectural choices, the first thing you want to think about is, do you need a site-in-the-box kind of experience? The whole idea that, and Eric went through this, that when you call IT and say, could I please have a site, that it's a trivial action. It's not go ahead and set up a project and work through a whole bunch of budgets about how big this site's going to be and what's going to be in it. The whole site-in-a-box experience is really, really powerful. And if you've got the environment where you're going to say, hey, I want to allow users to create sites on the fly or allow my help desk to create sites on the fly, that immediately says to you, start with SharePoint. And then you need to start looking at the customization level that you need to do on SharePoint. How far do you want to go? Do you want to start with nothing and just do vanilla SharePoint? And then sort of scaling up how much development you want to do. And with SharePoint 2010, we've entered a world where it is easier to start with the platform of SharePoint than it would be to start with ASP.NET raw, just raw ASP.NET. That there's enough functionality that we can take advantage of the platform and start further ahead than if we started with ASP.NET and what was raw out of the box. Let's go ahead. Skip. Skip that one. Okay, so let's talk about some of the details of this. First of all, normally if you create an ASP.NET application, you would go ahead and connect to a back-end data source, maybe your line of business application, and you'd go ahead and render that data inside your website. With SharePoint 2010, we can finally go in and say, I don't care whether it's line of business, what the line of business application is, I can connect and render that data inside my portal. So I'm using the same branding for all of my company, and I can start rendering data out of my ERP system or out of my database and start bringing it into SharePoint. And there's actually wizard-driven interfaces within SharePoint 2010 that allow you to do this, or even allow your end users to be able to do this if they have access to your line of business application. So this is really powerful because now I can do configuration-based rendering of data rather than having to have a developer write a bunch of code to do that. And, of course, developers can write it too and get a bunch of functionality from that. The other key problem that we had in 2007 was how do we go ahead and take our DLLs, our code, and wrap them up into a WSP file. The fundamental file that we deploy onto a SharePoint, this WSP, this SharePoint solution, there was lots and lots of people who were writing MS build scripts, and there were all sorts of solutions about how to create these WSP files and deploy them into SharePoint. And finally, in SharePoint 2010, what we have is within Visual Studio, the ability to go ahead and create a new SharePoint project that by default automatically compiles into a WSP file. And it can then go ahead and deploy that WSP file into SharePoint, and we can start debugging right from the IDE. This doesn't seem like much for those of you who haven't worked in 2007, because it just seems like obvious that that should be possible, but the ability to do that in 2007 was very painful. And we've, again, crossed the line. This is now a trivial action, literally, and we'll show you this, F5 and you're debugging your SharePoint site. That's huge. That's a huge piece of functionality and allows us, again, to make SharePoint 2010 development on par with ASP.NET. So let's go ahead and create So there's a whole bunch of solutions within SharePoint, different types of projects you can create. And we'll go through a demo of some of these. But the whole idea is that you can go ahead and start out of the box and generate a project that integrates with your SharePoint site. You have to specify which site you're connecting to, and it pops up and asks you which site you're going to connect to. And after that, you just go ahead and start creating the project and you can start programming. So immediately from the start, there's not this sort of large ramp-up time that you have to do in order to start your development. There is a whole bunch of functionality that you can do using the SharePoint Designer. In the past, I strongly told people, don't use SharePoint Designer. Right? Just don't get into doing that. It causes your pages to get shadowed. You don't want to do that. But the reality of it is now, with SharePoint 2010, we can start, or end users can start doing some kind of customization of their site, and you can restrict how much they could do or not do. And they can actually go ahead and customize what they're doing, on your, what's happening on your SharePoint site through this designer, and it's a way that doesn't force them to have to interact with code. Now, what's really important about the SharePoint 2010 designer experience that I think is critical for developers is I can take whatever the user has done, and I can actually go ahead and import that into a Visual Studio 2010 project. That is extremely powerful because before, what happened was I used SharePoint 2007 designer and I did up a whole bunch of work on my site, but there was no way to move that work into another location. I had no ability to do application lifecycle management. I couldn't go ahead and work on my test SharePoint site, do a whole bunch of stuff in SharePoint Designer, and then move that content into my production site because there was no sort of move functionality. The whole idea with SharePoint 2010 is I can actually go ahead and work with a test site, do a bunch of development in a non-code-centric manner, right? This is for your department-level kinds of stuff. Okay, if you're a hardcore code guru, you love to get in the code and get your hands dirty, this is not the tool for you. But if your end users have gone ahead and done something that allows them to do a WYSIWYG experience with their SharePoint site, you can do that on a test site. Then you can go ahead and export that, load it into Visual Studio, and use that as your starting point for an application that you want to go ahead and launch. And furthermore, you can export it out of your test site and then import it in to your production site. This is huge. Because before, we were totally stuck with this model of, I have to work on production, and if I do something wrong, my production is broken. Okay, the ability to go ahead and export and import these solutions is the biggest piece of functionality that you can get from SharePoint 2010 Designer. And before, where I would have said, don't use it, we would have shut it down, we actually secured the site to prevent Designer from being used, we're changing that and saying, no, it's okay to use SharePoint Designer. We can do it in a test box, you know, a sandboxed area, a special SharePoint site, and then we can export and import it in if everything worked out through QA. Does that make sense? Okay, let's keep going. Go ahead. Okay, another key piece that is really powerful about the new 2010 experience is the ability to connect to SharePoint 2010. There are many, many different ways you can connect. You can be running in context of the website and interact with an object model about SharePoint. You can go ahead and talk to the lists and talk to the data within the list. You can actually go ahead and configure SharePoint. That's fantastic. There's an external experience. I can go ahead and connect it from a client. I can literally write a WPF application that talks to my SharePoint server and does configuration changes on the SharePoint server, or goes ahead and modifies lists or data. That's very powerful because now externally I can interact with my SharePoint site without forcing somebody to use something like a web experience to do it. And in fact, Office is doing exactly that. Office allows you to go ahead and interact with your SharePoint site, not just through saving documents and interacting or posting the documents into the site, but actually loading the content from a list, loading the content from your calendar. Okay, that's coming out of SharePoint and rendering it into the Office application. I'll do a demo a bit later, but we actually take Microsoft Access and go ahead and do a quick form or quick table that's actually back-ending the data out of SharePoint and rendering inside Microsoft Access. And all of that is happening through the APIs that are now available from the client. Okay. There's one key thing that I always feel like I need to talk about when I talk about SharePoint in terms of the fundamental the fundamental thing about SharePoint is the fact that it's just a collection of lists. That everything, when you start interacting with SharePoint or talking about SharePoint, it's just lists. It could be a to-do list. It could be a calendar. What is a calendar? A calendar is a list of events. Okay? It could be a document list. It could be a document library. What is a document library? It's just a list of documents. The fundamental unit or grouping of units within SharePoint is this whole concept of a list. And that is very, very important, because if you can grasp that, the idea of using SharePoint as a storage mechanism for any kind of data is very powerful. You can start to think of it as a database with additional functionality added on, rather than this complex website that we haven't been able to figure out how to navigate and configure. So everything's a list. And fundamentally, especially when I talk to end users, if I can just get them to understand that SharePoint is just a list of lists, just that one concept allows them to go ahead and embrace SharePoint and start to grow that organically within my organization. Okay? So simple fundamental concept. And in 2010, we have a whole bunch of functionality added to SharePoint around that list support specifically. So if we go into SharePoint, and you can go ahead and do this while I'm talking. So if you go into, there's another slide. Sorry, shift F5. If you go to the next slide, you'll see that when we go ahead and go into a SharePoint list, okay, there's now this additional functionality for versioning our list. Previously, we could version documents, but we couldn't version the lists that are associated with SharePoint. Now there's versioning support that we can go ahead and do inside inside a list. There's advanced settings. We can start to go ahead and do validation on the data. So we can go ahead and allow, just in simple formulas, very much like what you would do in Excel, you know, length equals length, and then specify the column name equals, and you can go ahead and specify that it cannot be greater than 9, for example, on a telephone. The whole feature here of doing this is that you can start adding validation, again, without requiring, you know, code or deployment from a developer to go ahead and work. End users can go ahead and interact with putting validation on the data that's going in there, with going ahead and doing advanced settings like versioning, going ahead and automatically making sure that the data within a particular column is unique so that you can program against it or can use it to store data. Again, it seems like very fundamental concepts, but they weren't available in 2007, and now in 2010 we get those out of the box. And that's a huge feature set because it allows us to do fundamental things that we did as part of development. Go ahead and skip through. So here, one more. So here you'll see, here's a validation. I can go ahead and say on a phone number, a new column I can create, I can literally just go equals, you know, length, phone number's got to be greater than 9. And this is something, you know, we may be pushing the user's limits here, but this is something that really a user will not take a lot for a user to be able to write. It's very much like sort of VBA, Excel kind of macro language that we had before. Okay? And then, of course, there's enforced unique values, which we need if we want to go ahead and do joins between one list and another list. We want to be able to get some kind of uniqueness on the data that we're working with. And those important sort of relational rules that are being added into a fundamentalist capability. Okay, let's keep going. Branding. So, to me, one of the fundamental decisions that you have to make when you start to go with SharePoint is you want to decide how big... how much branding do you want to do? And there are many sites out there, you know, let's just pick one, T-Mobile, right? You go there, there's nothing about that site that would identify that this is SharePoint except for the URL, right? It does not look anything like what SharePoint's behind there. A big site that we work on is Avista Utilities. Again, doesn't look anything like what SharePoint looks out of the box. It's completely customized to be different. The idea of doing that was say we want to do externally facing sites, okay, so the internet sites, but we want to allow the ability to have users go through workflow of the documents they're posting. So I can go ahead and post a suggested document, a draft form of a document, and then I can go through approval to say, yes, we agree that this is kosher according to the company policy. Then we go have the right people approve it, and then the document gets published. Now, that functionality, if you think about it, you had to build it out of ASP.NET. That would take significant time to build, to get workflow integrated into your site and get all that work in. With SharePoint, it's out of the box, and now I can actually go through a publishing metaphor, a publishing workflow on my internet site about the data that's going out there. But I have to make this fundamental decision. How much branding do I want to take on? Because there's very little you can do by doing nothing, vanilla out of the box. Keep going. One more. You can go ahead and use themes. You can actually go ahead and use the same themes that we use in Office applications, Microsoft Word and Microsoft Access. The themes you can go and change, you can use the exact same thing you have there, and they exist within SharePoint. You can take those same themes you developed for your Word document, and you can export them and put them into SharePoint. That's amazing that we can do that, because it's a totally different paradigm. A rich client application like Word versus an internet application like SharePoint. The whole idea of these themes, we can just go ahead and turn on a different theme to go ahead and change the color, for example. That's sort of the lowest level that you want to do in terms of branding, so the easiest, you know, level to get at. And as you move up, you can customize. You can create a custom theme rather than using the out-of-the-box themes. That's a slightly higher bar that you're going to have to hit. You can go ahead and use these day and night master pages. You can modify the master page to go ahead and change the brand of the site. And then finally, you can go ahead and customize your master page using CSS. And there's no longer these incredible restrictions that we had in 2007, which was don't change this file. There was these hard-coded rules about not changing certain files in SharePoint, because if you upgraded or you put a service back in, that change would be lost. And those files, they've thought through the same way we went ahead and changed ASP.NET. Those same mechanisms have been brought forth into SharePoint 2010. So we know that we can take the same rules we learned in ASP.NET programming and use them in SharePoint regarding master pages and CSS. And allowing those to cascade throughout the entire site. It's a very powerful mechanism. You can skip through the next three slides. I think people know this part. We'll skip this one too. One of the key things when you go ahead and think about deploying new SharePoint that is very critical and has to be a lot of thought has to be given into is what we call the topology of the site, or the organization of the knowledge, the data, the security. The whole idea that I would choose to be able to create these sites in a box for specific users is fantastic, but once I've created it, who controls what can happen on that site? Who's the site owner? And the ability to go ahead and control your security to people who are site owners, that they can go ahead and be responsible for that site, is very powerful. Because before, in an ASP.NET world, if I said, okay, let's make a slight change, you would have to contact probably a developer to go ahead and make that change. Now, with organically grown sites, or SharePoint site collections, we want to allow users, enable users to go ahead and make those customizations. So the whole idea of establishing your site owners and making them responsible for making those changes and sort of giving them enough freedom to do the things that they need to do, but not so much freedom that they could bring the site down or they could change your branding. So you can actually choose different levels of permissions that say, okay, this user is a site owner. I'm going to allow them to go ahead and choose what is the contents that's rendered into the site, but I'm not going to allow them to change the branding because I want the branding to be consistent throughout the entire SharePoint collection. That ability to decide who are your site owners, your designers, and your IT administrators, that's really helpful, sort of break down the organization, who has what part of responsibility, and then as much as possible enable the users to do the things that you think they're capable of doing rather than having to always call IT. So it's a huge win if you can go ahead and distribute the load of work that you have to do on SharePoint. Okay, I think that's about all I can handle of PowerPoint for the next three or four days for sure. So let's go ahead and switch to Visual Studio. What I'm going to have Alan do here is to create a new SharePoint project. One of the things I like to do when I do demos is not bring a whole bunch of magic or pre-canned code. I just want to show you from the start what would it take to get a site up and running and make some changes. So we're going to go ahead and choose to create an empty SharePoint project. And in this project, what I'll just do is create a simple web part and sort of show through some of the mechanisms, the underlying functionality that's inside a SharePoint project and how that works. So we're going to connect to a local host. One thing that's interesting about here is the first prompt you get is whether you want to deploy to the sandbox solution or deploy to the farm. I'm not going to do the sandbox because I'm pretty sure that that's going to be covered when you do the Office 365. But this functionality, if you really think about it, was to allow people to write code that you wouldn't mind running on your site because it would be inside a sandbox. It couldn't do things like delete start on your C drive. Right? The whole idea that I could have a sandbox solution that's somewhat contained as to what it can do was a huge feature of SharePoint 2010, and that's really what enabled the idea that we can actually go out into the cloud. If I could do delete start, there's no way I'm getting into the cloud. If I can go ahead and write sandbox solutions now today that can only have limited access, limited rights, then I have full functionality to allow my developers to deploy a code onto my SharePoint site. And if the code is not good or it's not conformant to what the sandbox requires, I'm just going to get an exception saying you don't have permission to do that kind of thing. So I can sort of trust how much they can do on the site. So Alan's gone ahead and created a new SharePoint site. Let's go ahead and add a web part to that site. And I have a list already on my site, something we just did earlier. We just created a list called person, and it's got a first name, last name, nothing complex. So let's just go ahead and create a way to render that list, a web part to go ahead and render that list. So the focus right here is not on doing something that, you know, is full functionality, but really sort of show you the under the cover stuff that's there to enable you to go ahead and do the more, you know, real world scenarios. So Alan's gone ahead and created this, and he's going to go ahead and open up one of the CS files, maybe. And you'll notice just out of the box that we got this generated code. Let's go ahead and put a breakpoint on there and then do an F5. You'll notice at the bottom it says deploy started, adding solution, animating, and deploy succeeded. By pushing F5, it's literally gone ahead and compiled my C# code into a DLL. It's taken that DLL and it's moved it, or compiled it, or packaged it, that's the right word, packaged it into a WSP file. It's then gone ahead and taken that WSP file, deployed it into my SharePoint farm or my SharePoint site collection, and then it's gone ahead and activated it automatically. So now when I go to my SharePoint site, I've gone ahead and added, or have the ability to go ahead and add that web part. And we'll go ahead and see it. There it's listed right there. Person visual web part, the one Alan just created. Again, for those people who are just getting started with SharePoint development right now, you're like, oh, what the heck is the big deal? For those of us who have lived in the world of 2003 and 2007, this is amazing. I mean, we're totally blown away that this fundamental capability is actually in the box. We can just do this F5. And as you can see, we can actually now debug and start stepping through our code if something went wrong or something wasn't working. So this is a huge, productivity gain. And again, I think it's what allows us to cross the line from SharePoint 2007 is way harder than ASP.NET into 2010. We say it's better to start with the platform of SharePoint than it would have been to start with raw ASP.NET. Okay, let's look at some of the fundamental parts of the build system. So first of all, let's talk about how it's actually working underneath the covers, or one of the ways we can interact with SharePoint. Can we all go to a command prompt? So one of the things that you can do with your command prompt, and I've literally gone ahead and done this, is say, okay, as a developer, I'm frequently creating sites and tearing them down again and recreating them and tearing them down just sort of to get a reflection, make sure that I'm not leaving anything around dirty or creating virgin sites or doing a bunch of interaction. And if you go through the web UI, it's kind of painful. Right? I love to just stay on the keyboard, not use my mouse, just go as fast as I can. Now, with SharePoint 2010, we get the ability to interact with SharePoint through PowerShell. And we can do things like, let's go ahead and open up, I'll show you a script. One more. Okay, we can look at this one. That's fine. So you'll notice there's a line here. We're going to have to zoom in. Is there a zoom function at the bottom on the... Yeah. We good? Can you guys see? Is that good? Okay. So you can open another one. Okay, so one of the things I do frequently is create new web applications in SharePoint. And this is a, you know, I don't know, seven-step process if you go through the IDE. And I'm doing it for development. I don't care about things like the title or, you know, what is the description. There's a whole bunch of data that I don't really need to do, but I'm doing it all the time because I'm trying to, you know, sort of script my whole development process. So I just quickly whipped up a PowerShell thing here. The key things you need to note, I don't expect you to understand PowerShell syntax, but there's a couple key things you should know. First of all, I do the add snap-in. There is a snap-in, a PowerShell snap-in, that you go ahead and just literally call that line. It's the snap-in is added into PowerShell when you go ahead and call add snap-in, and the availability of that snap-in is simply because you've installed SharePoint. So installing SharePoint automatically gives you the snap-in, and then you can go ahead and activate it by calling add snap-in. So that one line there is key, because you can't use any of the SharePoint, the PowerShell commands without it. And then you can look at the last one here. I've got a new SP web application. So again, I just sort of figured out what is my name going to be about to be default, a bunch of stuff that I just sort of generate. In my case, I actually go ahead and figure out what is the user security that my site's going to run under. Well, I want to create a custom user for this web application, so I just generate it on the fly using PowerShell, and then I can reuse that user in my actual creation of the site so that I know which user the application is going to run under. So the key thing that I want you to know here is the fact that you can do a lot of these commands through PowerShell allows you to script a lot of your development process. So that's no longer the things you're doing over and over again, especially when it comes to testing, you can script all those and certainly automate the amount of work that you're doing. And it cuts down development hugely. This is a huge gain in productivity. Okay, so that's PowerShell. Let's go back into the project. Should we start MS Build? Yeah, let's do that. Okay, so let's first show the MS Build, the actual project file. One of the key features, and I hesitate to say the most important feature, but for me, for development, this was huge, is that you can go ahead and open the project, edit a project file. You just went past it. You can go ahead and look at the project file, and the SharePoint project file is just an MS build file. Okay? How many of you actually have ever looked at your CS proj files or VB proj files? If you look behind the scenes, it's actually just an MS build file. This is just an XML file that's written for, according to the schema that's required by MS build. Your SharePoint projects now are exactly the same. And at the very bottom, you'll notice that it goes ahead and references a targets file. There you can see SharePoint tools, a targets file. We won't open it. But in that target file, you get commands for going ahead and working with your solution, like packaging it up. Now, if you did this before, there was no functionality out of the box for just creating a WSP file. You had to download a bunch of tools and a bunch of scripts, and there was a whole bunch of work. Now, we literally go to the command line, and here we can go ahead and type msbuild, just like that, and hit enter, and automatically now our project is built. Oh, we're not in this right directory. So literally can type msbuild. All that does is take all our C# code and compile it into a DLL. Now what we really want for SharePoint is a WSP file. Okay, we need a SharePoint solution file. To get the SharePoint solution file, we can just go ahead and call a specific msbuild target. So we go ahead and type msbuild/t:package. Okay, now it's taking that DLL that it's already compiled. If it hadn't compiled, it would go ahead and compile it. And now it's generating a WSP file. And if you go look inside bin, debug bin, you'll see that one of the outputs now is the WSP file, not just the DLL. And now I can go ahead and take that WSP file and deploy it into SharePoint. And that's exactly what Visual Studio is doing. If you go back to Visual Studio and you right-click on the project, all of the interactions that we do within Visual Studio. He's reloading it. Sorry. Thank you. You'll notice at the very top, there's all these commands. Rebuild, deploy, clean, run code analysis. That's not part of SharePoint. package or retract. You can go ahead and remove the solution. That's huge functionality that before we had to go ahead and write a lot of custom scripts to go ahead and do. We just get it out of the box now. Questions? I'll repeat the question. I'll repeat it. It's okay. Can you repeat again?
If you deploy new DLL, new WSP file, you have to restart the server or it automatically?
Oh, the question was, do I have to restart the server if I go ahead and deploy a new WSP file? And the answer is no. Okay? I can go ahead and retract and go ahead and redeploy and over again, and I never have to do an IIS reset or anything like that. Okay, good question. Anything else? Go ahead.
I was
if you can, so the question was, what is farm performance when you're doing a live debug? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I recommend you don't do debugging of your production site. So I would tell you what it was, but I've never actually tried, so I don't know. That would be okay. There was one more question back there. So the question is this only available in Visual Studio 2010? The short answer is definitely yes. There was a solution in 2007 called VSE WSS for going ahead and doing solutions. The comparison they're not even the same league of functionality. They're not even the same league. The VSE WSS did allow you to create WSP files, but they couldn't be deployed from Visual Studio. You couldn't debug from Visual Studio. They're not in the same league. I hesitate to say this, you know, but because I know there's a lot of people in the real world, you don't have SharePoint 2010 yet deployed and stuff like that, but I would be very hard-pressed to take on a SharePoint 2007 project, or certainly a SharePoint 2000 without Visual Studio 2010. At this point, I just think the amount of work and the idiosyncrasies that you have to go through from 2007 and Visual Studio 2008 are not worth the cost. And I don't want to take any revenue away from Microsoft and old products, but seriously, it would be very painful. And I've lived in that world for a long time. It's really hard. So, okay, let's keep going. So we created this visual web part, And one of the things I'd like to go ahead and do is interact with SharePoint from inside the web part. So start working with the data that's coming out of the list. So to do that, let's go ahead and open up. Let's go ahead and add a list box to our control, to our web part. And that's good enough. And then let's go into the code behind and modify that code behind. And the thing we want to do here is we want to get access to the data that's coming out of the SharePoint site. So we want to get access to the data that's stored in a list, for example. So let's first of all figure out what our URL is. Let's go ahead and get the SP context to figure out what the URL is. So we're going to go ahead and declare a string. We'll call it URL equals SP context dot where, okay, current dot web. Okay, so now we've got the URL. That means we've got a handle to where are we located. And the reason we need this is we want to go ahead and open up a data context. And we want to open up a data context on the data that we're interacting with. Okay? Is this coming from ASP Web? Oh, let's look at the references. So the answer is no. Let's not. Well, we can do that. We can add a reference, but I was just going to show the ones. So actually, we've got a SharePoint reference. We've got a Microsoft SharePoint, or a Microsoft SharePoint security reference. That's where that context is coming from. Okay? The question, I don't know if I repeated the question, but the question was, is this coming from ASP Web? And the answer is...
ASP Web. There is an ASP Web object.
Yes. Yes. It's not coming from there. It's coming from SharePoint. Okay. So let's go ahead and declare our data context. One thing you need to know about the data context... Oh, you're going to add a reference? Okay. So we need to add a reference. And the reason we want to add a reference is because we want to interact with the list as though it was link data. Okay, I want to say that very, very clearly. In SharePoint, users can go ahead and configure lists and create lists willy-nilly on the fly as they like. If they have access rights to that site, they can go ahead and create new lists. Now, what I want to be able to do is program against the lists in SharePoint using link. Okay, and the reason why I do that, I really want to get strongly typed data coming out of those lists. So when I go to person, I actually have a person object. And when I do a dot operation, I actually want to see first name and last name. Okay, and to do that, to be able to start that whole query, I need to go ahead and add link as a reference to my project. And that's what Alan just went and did when I wasn't looking. He added a reference to the link library. And that gives me this whole context. This is sort of the root of my database, if you like, because I'm looking at SharePoint as being a database. The root of my database is this data context. And I go ahead and open up that data context. I instantiate it. Okay, and it's disposable. That's why I use the using statement. I instantiate it. However, I'm now stuck. If the list is configurable by the user, and it can change, and I want to have a person object, I somehow need to generate the definition of my person object, I could handwrite it, of course. I could handwrite that object. I want to go ahead and say, what is the schema of the list that I want to interact with? Okay. If I want to do strongly typed interactions with my list, I need to somehow come up with an object that I can instantiate that represents the data that's stored in my collection. In the same way, I mean, to be very clear about this, in the same way that you would against a table in your database, in a real database like SQL Server, not like some others we might know of, right? So we want to be able to interact with this data in a way that's strongly typed. That when I do a dot operation, I don't go, oh, what was the name of that column? I can't quite remember. What I really want to see is IntelliSense that tells me the name, okay? And to do that, I have to go look in the SharePoint site, and I have to download the lists, and I have to generate an entity that represents that list that was on my SharePoint site. Okay? Now, because of where SharePoint came out, when 2010 came out, and when SharePoint 2010 came out, Visual Studio 2010 and SharePoint 2010, the way we actually do this is using a link to SQL tool called ASP.NET. Okay, and I want to be very clear about this. ASP.NET, if you're doing regular development, .NET development, it would not be your first choice. I'll try to say that, you would use Entity Framework. In SharePoint 2010 with .NET 4, the right choice now going forward, by far, no contest, is Entity Framework. Okay? And Entity Framework has an EDMX file that is generated in the same way that we're going to go ahead and generate a CS file. Okay? However, for SharePoint development, we're using ASP.NET, which was the older technology that was used for generating these entities. Now, do you have to be concerned about a migration path in the future if you go ahead and generate these objects and stuff like that? Because it's generated, it's not important. Right? When I go ahead and upgrade, and Microsoft says, okay, entity framework is supported. I'm not divulging information. We can make reasonable assumptions that there will be entity framework support for, you know, SharePoint 2000X. Right? When you want to do that, it's generated code. So going ahead and doing that upgrade is simply regenerating the code. No big deal. So you don't have to feel like you're locking yourself into old technology when you do this. From the command line, I can go ahead and type ASP.NET. There's a whole long path. I wouldn't even bother to show you, but you can go ahead and type ASP.NET. And then you can go ahead and point to the location of your SharePoint data. So in this case, the URL of my data. One clarification. ASP.NET that I'm running right now is the SharePoint version of ASP.NET, not the linked to SQL version of ASP.NET. Just want to be very clear about that, right? This is specifically taking in a SharePoint site. You can then go ahead and specify a slash code that allows you to identify the name of the file that you want to generate the code into. Okay? We could do a whole bunch of other stuff, but we're going to go ahead and just write this file. So the first thing we put in there is the URL. And our window is so small that we can't see it all. So the first thing we put in the URL, then we do a slash code, and then we identify the name of the file that we want to be output. Go ahead. What's it doing? It's going out to SharePoint. It's navigating all the lists within the SharePoint site, and it's generating a C# class that represents that data. Okay, let's open up that file. Okay, you do not want to modify this file because ideally you'd be able to regenerate it over and over again, so you don't want to modify it. And we're going to go ahead and add it to the project. And now, within our actual code, we can go back there. I'll show you a definition, but let's write some code first. Within our page load, we can go ahead, inside where we get the data context, we can now actually interact with that data context with a strongly typed object for our person list. Okay? So we're going to do let get list person. Now, the person item here, you've seen me start from scratch. I never created a person item. That was what was generated into my entities.cs file. Okay, let's do an F12 onto that. Here is that generated code. You'll notice that there's a schema or an attribute on top there that identifies what is the name of the list where this data is coming out of. Okay, and then I've got properties corresponding to the first name and last name. They're actually my list. I've got a property lower down, and you've got a column attribute that says, okay, well, what is the field type? The field type was text. When I went and created the solution and did add column, it asks you, what is the data? What is the field type? I said text. That's why it's using text right here. Okay, so there's a mapping using metadata between the data that's in my SharePoint site and the data that's right here in my object-oriented language. Okay, and this is exactly what you did against a database using Entity Framework or linked to SQL, but now we're actually doing this against SharePoint data. So now I have a strongly typed interaction with the data that's coming out of SharePoint. Okay, let's go back. Do an F12 again. Okay, so the question is, I've got a conditional, the if value first name change, that one there right there, the if? Yeah, so I'm doing this because I got a property changed event, so you can actually go ahead and subscribe to data and you can actually go subscribe to the data change. So the reason this is important is because if you go ahead and modify the data, you want SharePoint to go ahead and render that new data as you change it, and vice versa. If SharePoint change the data, you can go ahead and trap that, intercept that change, and go ahead and respond to that thing. Like you could add validation, for example. So this is the same. Go to the interface at the top. You know, I notify property changes or something. Oh, it's in item. Okay. So basically, this is the same I notify property change support that you would have if you're programming in XAML or all these other libraries that you can use, right? It's just basically a way of saying, let me know when data within the object changes, so that I can go ahead and react to that. I could cancel the change, for example, because the data is not valid, and I could write C# code corresponding to that. Okay. So the question was, why do I go ahead and have that on property change event? And that's the answer. Okay. So back here, I can now do a get list. And in the get list, I specifically say, what is the data type of the data that I want to have coming out of this list? In this case, it generated a person item for me. So I'm going to say, go ahead and get the data type of type person. Collections misspelled. And I think you need to pass a parameter for the column, the data, the table, the list name. Okay, interesting question here. I have a list called person. I've generated a schema corresponding to that list. I then am going to go ahead and call datacontext.getList. Okay, and I'm passing a type parameter called person item. Okay, now why do I also need to specify the list name when I do this query if I've already identified the data type coming out? Any ideas? Why do I have to identify the list name as well as identify the data type in my type parameter? I could have many lists with that using that same schema. Exactly. Right? So not only am I identifying the schema that the list has, that's what my person item does, I'm also identifying which list I'm querying this data out of. Now, once I've got that list, I can go ahead and do an iterate. I can iterate over the data in that entity collection. Notice the data type is an entity list. I can now iterate over that entity list and pull out person item objects. So let's go ahead and do a for each loop. And I think it's list item. I think it's list item. In the context, it's not. In this one, I think it is. Yeah, it's fine. Okay, so now the items that were coming out. Now notice, it's actually a person. Sorry. So it's a strongly typed list. So the I could use var here, but it's just I prefer to be more explicit. Because it's a strongly typed list, it's a strongly typed list of person item. Right? So now I can literally go ahead and iterate over that and get back person items. And I can now go ahead and say item dot, and I know we're going to add it to the list. Let's just item dot right now. And you'll notice I'm getting first name, I'm getting ID, I'm getting last name, I'm getting path. This is all the data that I had about my list in SharePoint. Okay? And let's go ahead and add that to our list. It was a list box or something like that. So now we're taking that person object, the strongly typed data, and we're going to go ahead and add it to the list over each item. Let's give it a try. One other thing, can you go back to person item? You'll notice one other thing about this, it's a partial class. Okay, just like a data generated with Entity Framework, this is a partial class, which means if you want to add additional properties, like a full name property, okay, you can go ahead and add that and go ahead and join the first name and last name so you just have one kind of thing. Because it's a class and it's a partial class, you can add your own file side by side that has, you know, your naming convention or additional calculated data that you want to have around, associated with the property. Okay, go back. You could use title here if you want, but either one. It's good enough. Okay. Let's run it. Did you debug it or you run it? Okay. So we're going to do an F5. What we need to do now is go ahead and add that item. Well, we already did. There we go. Oh, we added it earlier. That's right. Okay. So here we're going to go ahead and we're rendering the list data onto my home page of my site and I'm iterating through that. Let's do a debug so we can actually step through what's going inside the debugger. Start with the SP context. That's great. While that's coming up, I want to make a couple comments. Ideally, we would only ever have to use LinkedIn SharePoint like this all the time for all interactions with lists. And certainly when SharePoint came out, this sort of this idea that, oh, we wouldn't have to use CAML anymore, the SharePoint query language that was available previously, I want to be clear that there is still a need for doing that. So we're doing this interaction right here because we're interacting with it on the site. We have access to the data coming out of the site. And if you, that's the key thing here. We're inside the site, and so we can do these link queries, interact with the lists without pulling data across the wire, right? Because the code, the execution of the code is actually running inside IIS. On the client side, you can use lists, but it's more like a link to, you can use link, but it's more like link to objects than it is like SharePoint link with these strongly typed data types. It's more like link to objects. Now, you can do it, but you have to do queries, and you have to specify a CAML query that then returns data that is rendered into a strongly typed object. Okay, so in other words, it's slightly more complicated when you want to do it on the client side. There's also some security issues you might encounter. So just be aware that the way we're demoing this is we're running on the server. This code is executing on the server, and therefore we have the full context and ability to navigate these objects. If you go ahead and want to do this client-side in a WPF app or in a console application, it's more complicated because you have to work with CAML to go and get that initial list of data. And that's because we don't want to send very large lists of all the data over the wire. Okay? We don't want to send those large lists of data over the wire. Okay, so here we're debugging. So we can go ahead and step through. Let's go down into person item. Go ahead and see it instantiated, one instance of person item. And here we have a person item. So it's gone ahead and said, what is the first item in the list? Oh, we took too long. I'm sorry about that. We expired. We took too long. We'll just pretend. Imagine. Just imagine that it's working beautifully. We took too long. Sorry. So here, if you got your item, you can go ahead and do a dot notation. You can actually go do your query. You can interact with the data from the command window, and you can actually interact with it. Okay. Questions about link and SharePoint? Question over there. Okay, the question was, what is the minimum permissions I need to deploy something to SharePoint? The question is, what kind of deployment you want to do? You do need to have site collection administrator rights to do what we're doing, interacting with the site. But if you're doing something, because we're not using a sandbox solution, right? If you're in a sandbox solution, you can go ahead and scale those down to be site owner, I think. I'm not sure off the top of my head. But there's less. You don't have to have site collection administration to do that. What was that? Yeah, your site administrator, I think, but not even you don't even need site administrator rights for a sandbox solution, right? So I just can't remember right now, but you don't need that. I want to piggyback on that question and make a statement. We're actually running this, and I think most people know this, but we're running on Windows 7. So we've actually gone ahead and installed SharePoint 2010 on our Windows 7 box. And we're debugging and working, interact locally with our development. So this is key because now I can use a workstation OS, install a SharePoint tool, install a server tool, SharePoint 2010, and then start interacting and debugging with it. So I've done everything locally. I've not had to do what I did in 2007, which was spin up a virtual machine, put Windows 2008 or Windows 2003 on it, and go through that whole process. Everything is right here on a workstation running Windows 7. There's a special install switch. There's very clear instructions. Go through a bunch of stuff you have to install, and then you can basically do what we're doing, bugging, which is live interaction with that. Other questions? Okay. Yes. 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 So the question was, can you go ahead and take an external data source and import it in using something that's generated by ASP.NET? So I think what you're asking is my ASP.NET interaction here read-write?
Yes.
Absolutely. So the answer is absolutely. This is a read-write interaction. So his question originally was, can I export data in? I probably wouldn't go through a programming exercise to do that. I would go ahead and open up, Excel, Access even. If you go back to the site and go to List, Person, and click on List, and then view the access. Yeah, open with Access. You can open Microsoft Access here. It says where you want to specify. So now, I don't know if you remember this, but in versions prior, I won't remember which versions, but with Access, I could go ahead and have access as a database, and all my data was stored locally. And we would never want to build databases bigger than like one person. And then Microsoft had this wizard that you could go ahead and take the data and back-end it into SQL Server. So now I could have SQL Server storing the data, but I could have a front end written in Microsoft Access where the bar for doing development was way lower than having to know, like, you know, low-level C code or anything like that. Now, with Access 2010, I can actually back end that data into SharePoint and use SharePoint as my store, and I can build a Forms UI, a rich client UI, in Microsoft Access, which again is more accessible to some of your users than it would be to write code, and they can actually start interacting with the data in through Microsoft Access. Mathun, question.
So there's an online question. How does list throttling work with link to SharePoint?
Yeah, so in this particular, so the question was, how does list throttling work with link to SharePoint? In this case, I'm interacting with all the data on the server, so the need to do this list throttling isn't as big a deal. It's when it comes over the wire, and that's when I'm going to go ahead and work with CAML again. So I mentioned to you before, if you're bringing all your data back to the client, you need to actually restrict that using a CAML query before you can start interacting with it through through link. Okay. How much time do we have? I got a quick demo with client context or no quick demo with client context? So one of the things, I don't know, Mathun's going to answer me about time, but one of the questions, I got 10 minutes? Okay, so let's do it. Let's do a unit test. So I'm really, I'm pretty strong in trying to do test-driven development as I do my interactions, and a lot of stuff we've done here with demos. How do we go ahead and test the stuff we're working with? How do we test our interaction with SharePoint? So I want to show you some unit testing features that you can do. If you go ahead and get Visual Studio Professional, you automatically get unit testing. And you can start doing things like web testing as well. And so there's a couple principles here that I use for my testing. Number one, the kind of changes that we're making right here where I wrote a web part wasn't Silverlight, and I want to go ahead and test what it's rendering like inside SharePoint. To do that, I would write a web test. A web test is very much a UI test. It's not a code test. It's a web test. So you record the UI, and then you verify the data that's being rendered inside the HTML. And it basically looks at the wire, the data coming over, what data is coming over the wire, and then looks at that data and examines it. However, if you want to write a fundamental test method, you want to do it slightly different. In this particular case, why don't you just paste the code in because we're kind of short of time. If you want to go ahead and do a test method where you're running a raw unit test, what you want to do is actually interact with SharePoint from a test project. And so I've got some code here. We would have just written it, but we'll just paste it in, where you can go ahead and get the client-side context. Okay, so now I'm not inside IIS. I'm now outside of IIS. I could be on the same box or in a completely different box. Not important, from a completely different box now, I can go ahead and get the URL. In this case, I used FTSP context. That's not going to work. You've got to change the hard code there. You hard code the URL of where you want to talk to it. This is where the SharePoint site is. This is where the data is. And now I want to go ahead and talk and interact with that data from outside that context. Now, I happen to be using a test. You could do the exact same thing using XAML, for example. It doesn't really matter. Using WPF, you can interact with that data. And so I'm going to go ahead and do a context. I'm going to instantiate that client context. I'm going to get a list back. I'm going to load that list. And then I'm going to go ahead and verify that the list is not null. Or, yeah, is not null. So does everyone understand the difference? Before, all the code I showed you with link to SharePoint was running inside IIS. Now I've got an entirely different process on the same machine or not on the same machine is not important, but now I'm going to do the exact same interaction with SharePoint using a different, we're using the client API, the client object model. Okay, very powerful. So here we'll go ahead and say verify that it's not null, and let's go ahead and just run it. So this is a pretty simple test. We're just going to get back the list of persons. We can verify that the list coming back is not null, and then we can go ahead and interact with the items themselves. Like, we can iterate over the list and start working with it. Questions about that? I think this allows you, this is exactly how SharePoint, how things like Office and Access are working. They're doing client-side stuff, bringing all that data back to the client, and then they interact with it on the client and making modifications and changes. Okay? You can literally build rich client applications on top of SharePoint, not just with Silverlight, but actually on the client side to go and work with your data that's back there. I have a real application. I have a customer who says, hey, I would love to go ahead and write an application that tracked claims that were being made by, so insurance claims, right? These insurance claims or just regular claims were coming in and thought, well, there's lots and lots of documents that go around insurance, tons and tons of documents. What if I actually made my back-end storage mechanism SharePoint where I versioned all those documents because often these insurance claims go into litigation? What if I actually backed into all the data inside SharePoint and actually built an application which was rich client, allowed them to interact with it very fast, but it was using SharePoint as the back end because I could version my documents, I could go through workflow, and I could do a bunch of stuff. Okay, we're done with those. Let's go back to slides quickly. Shift F5. We're going to go real fast through these slides. I talk about the different object models, the fact that you can remote into the data. There's four main ways we talk about interacting programmatically with SharePoint. There's through the web services, the client object model. I showed you the client object model, and I showed you on the server side as well with Link. We talked about Link, the whole idea that I can get strongly typed data. It can go ahead and validate my my data types, validate my column names. I can get IntelliSense. That's huge. Query syntax, we'll skip that. This is basically the client object model. So if you are building a rich client application for SharePoint or your own custom application that you want to work with data inside SharePoint, here's an object model sort of graph shown there. Client context, we did some of that. You can skip that one. Skip that one. So again, if you're doing REST, that's a bunch of stuff in REST. I think somebody said they might be doing a demo on this later, so hopefully that will be good. Let's go quickly back into the project. Actually, I won't. So the other thing you can do from inside your SharePoint project, you can right-click on your feature, and you can actually add events. And it'll generate code. It's commented out that allows you to receive a notification when something on the site changes. So you can write events for your lists, for example. You can write events for your features. So you can actually take a feature and say, go ahead and notify me when this feature is activated. And then you can do custom things like turn on pages or turn off pages or remove things when you do the remove. Very powerful, those new events that are available. Next. Workflow, keep going. Silverlight 4 support. That poll's going to be showing that later today, so I'm not going to show a demo on that. Anything else? Sandbox, we talked about the importance of that and being able to go into the cloud, which we'll see at 1 o'clock. Package and deployment. I've talked about this quite extensively, so I think we're good on that part. This one thing I do want to talk about, Team Foundation Server. This is really cool. So because of the fact that MS Build is the underlying engine, I can take all that logic and I can actually integrate them with my build. So now I can check in, and literally the source code control can check into Team Foundation Server. I can use gated check-in to make sure that all my code compiles, and if it doesn't compile, my check-in is rejected. I can use a gated check-in. Then after the check-in runs, I can actually run those unit tests that I just showed you how to create. Those unit tests would automatically be run on the code to make sure that they actually work against the site. You can deploy the site out using your MS Build scripts because that's all part of your Team Foundation Server. And using something like Lab Manager, you could actually spin up servers and actually start SharePoint servers and actually start interacting with those SharePoint servers using Lab Manager. So the integration with Team Foundation Server allows me to do the full fidelity of application lifecycle management best practices, use them with my SharePoint development as well. This is a big deal, again, because in 2007, this was unbelievably painful. What we call consider best practice, you must always do this. People were saying all the time, when you went to SharePoint 2007 and Visual Studio 2008, that was hard, hard, hard work. Now with 2008, it's much more smooth, much more streamlined, okay, because it's just part of the integration package. And a specific thing that they wanted to do, one of their pillars of functionality was they want to allow you to do best practice development even with SharePoint. Okay, and I think they've reached that bar. A little bit about my company, and that's it. Questions? Over here. Yes, yes.
Up till now, of course, that you can do that, but it includes all the content from that test environment.
So that's true, but there's a whole bunch of functionality you don't get about the design and the pages. So you can export the list data, but not the design around those lists and stuff like that. So that's the key distinction, right? Exporting data itself was not hard in 2007 at all. In fact, it was one of the...
So now you're saying you can export the functionality you're coding
The customization... Yeah, so the clarification is now I can go in customizing using SharePoint Designer, not just about the data, about the lists, but the customizations like the branding or the page layout. I can go ahead and export that into a WSP file and then import into another solution. So again, I get to use application lifecycle management best practices by working on a test site and then moving that to a production site rather than doing SharePoint Designer work on my production site. Okay. So there's a significant distinction. I wasn't referring to list data itself, but rather the data around the list, right? The layout and that kind of thing. Other questions? Over here.
We have a development team, and we have only one
Okay, so the question was, we've got one SharePoint server, and it's shared by all developers. We're running 32-bit on the client, so we can't install Windows SharePoint 2010 onto our workstations. It only works in 64-bit. How do we go ahead and do that? My answer to you is go ahead and create site collections for each developer. So first of all, my answer to you would be try avoid it. But if you're stuck, right, I want to be understanding, right? If you're stuck, then go ahead and create a different site collection for each developer so that they can work in their own area without affecting the other developers. And that works fairly well. I mean, and realistically, that's a totally viable way to work. You're not on the same machine, so debugging and stuff like that is not going to be the same. But you can do a lot. So you can do the development, you can do your testing, you can do all that kind of stuff without an issue. So. So the question was, if we integrate source control into TFS, will that detect the changes? Yes, because you're working with all your source code is totally offline on your box. When I do deploy, it simply takes my WSP and deploys the WSP. It deploys the binaries, if you like, of my solution. And I don't check the binaries into TFS unless I'm doing it for some other reason. Right? So because those binaries are local, I can interact with SharePoint or with TFS completely autonomously as one developer, and if I go ahead and change a file and I check it in, another developer changes the file, then we're going to have to go ahead and merge changes. That works beautifully. You're not using SharePoint as your source code control server. You're using SharePoint for testing and debugging. Your source code control server is TFS, and you have an offline copy of that data in TFS. You work with it, you make your changes, you test it, and then you check it in. And then ideally, your build server picks it up, does a compile, verifies that it compiles, then goes ahead and deploys into a test environment and deploys virtual machines and does all that. Okay. So the question was, is there any plan for the SharePoint Designer functionality to get into Visual Studio? And I can't say this authoritatively, but I can say fairly confidently. Obviously, Microsoft wants to make Visual Studio the best experience for developers, and they want to make SharePoint Designer approachable by the end user. And so we're never going to see them perfectly overlap, but where it's useful for developers to have functionality, they're going to put it inside Visual Studio and they're going to drive towards doing that. Things like WYSIWYG editors and stuff like that, absolutely. We already get some of that today, right? If I can go into the WebPart designer, I can do design in the WebPart. That's a WYSIWYG editor, but it's live because I'm working on the client in my development environment. With SharePoint Designer, I'm working with the data that's actually on that server. And when I want to see it rendered, I'm working with it on the SharePoint server. So it's a totally different interactive model because one is designed for end users interacting with SharePoint, and one is designed for developers who are going to go ahead and check their code into TFS. But in terms of actual interaction and development, yes, you can start to see those two worlds get closer and closer for sure. Other questions? One more? We good?
One more and then.
Okay. One more question. Do you know? I don't do this, so.
You have to use the package that you create.
Yeah, so.
It doesn't do a remote push.
Yeah, so let me answer very clearly. So you cannot do what we did here to deploy remotely from Visual Studio, but you can certainly take the package and do a deployment of that package into a different site, obviously, because you're building it and compiling it, you can do that. But the whole debug F5 experience, as far as I know, does not work offshore. It's only on the client side, on the workstation, developer workstation. Good question. Okay, thank you. What was that?
How important is that?
Yeah, so I'll ask the Microsoft question. How important would that be to you? How many of you can develop on SharePoint? Can install SharePoint on your own developer workstations? Who's doing that? So not even 50%. Right, so it's really important for you guys because doing what we just showed you is going to be really hard. If you don't have a 64-bit OS, you're not going to be installing SharePoint on that machine, and you're going to go back in sort of a legacy world in terms of what you had to experience with 2007 in deployment and testing. It's going to be a lot harder. Unit testing would be huge if you can get unit testing going. So, okay, we're good. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.